Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Cocaine Blues, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Devil's Contract. I should have known better. I should have seen it coming the moment my fingers wrapped around that microphone again, the moment the stage lights burned hot against my skin. I should have known the devil doesn't give second chances without a price. But I was desperate, and desperation makes a woman do foolish things. My name is Veronica St. James, but if you were a disco lover back in the 70s, you knew me as Vera Blue. I was the queen of the dance floor, the woman who made heads turn, hips sway, and club owners rich. My voice could make men fall to their knees, my legs could send a room into a frenzy, and my records? They sold like wildfire. For a while, I was untouchable. I had it all, the money, the fame, the drugs, the power. And then, as fast as it all came, it was gone. That's the thing about the music industry, it doesn't let you breathe. You miss one step, make one mistake, and they forget your name before you can take your next breath. I burned out. Hard. Too many bad decisions, too many bad men, too much cocaine, and not enough self-control. Before I knew it, I was another washed-up has-been, a cautionary tale whispered among the new girls in the industry who swore they'd never end up like me. But the thing about fallen stars? We never stop chasing the light. And that's why when Lorenzo Loco De Luca walked into my life, I let him take my hand and lead me right back into the fire. I met De Luca in a private suite at the Ritz-Carlton in Miami, the kind of place where the chandeliers cost more than my entire career earnings. I hadn't been on a real stage in years, hadn't heard my name spoken with any kind of respect in longer than I cared to count. My bank account was a joke, my options were running out, and the only thing keeping me from completely disappearing was my stubborn, pathetic refusal to accept that my time was over. But De Luca? He had plans for me. He sat across from me in a white linen suit, gold chains resting against his chest, his black hair slicked back like something out of a gangster flick. He didn't look like a music executive. Hell, he didn't even look like a man who cared about music. But when he spoke, his words dripped with power. "I want to bring Vera Blue back to life," he said, swirling the glass of bourbon in his hand like he had all the time in the world. "I want to give you a comeback the world won't forget." I should have laughed. I should have asked what the catch was. I should have run. Instead, I leaned in, heart pounding. "How?" His smile stretched slow and knowing, like he'd already won. "You let me handle the business. You just do what you do best, sing." It was too easy. Too clean. Too perfect. But when you've spent the last 5 years clawing at the bottom of the barrel, you don't ask questions when someone hands you a ladder. I shook his hand. And that's the moment I sold my soul. The comeback happened fast. One minute, I was drinking cheap whiskey alone in my apartment, and the next I was back on stage, dressed in silk and sequins, belting out the songs that once made me a household name. The crowds returned, the money flowed, the champagne popped. It felt like 1978 all over again. But there was a difference this time. This time, I knew what was happening behind the scenes. The tour buses weren't just carrying backup dancers. The cargo in my private jet wasn't just my wardrobe. The men lurking backstage weren't record label executives. De Luca wasn't just funding my comeback. He was using it. Drugs. A lot of drugs. Shipments moving from city to city, tucked neatly under the guise of a nostalgic music tour. Cocaine smuggled in sound equipment, heroin packed into instrument cases. The same poison that had almost destroyed me was now fueling my resurrection. I should have cared. I should have walked away. But God help me, I loved the feeling of being back in the spotlight. I loved the way people screamed my name, the way they looked at me like I was still their disco queen. So I turned a blind eye. And for a while it worked. Then came Madison Square Garden. A sold-out crowd. A sea of flashing lights. The sound of my name echoing through the venue like a battle cry. This was it, the peak of my second coming. The moment I'd dreamed about since the day I fell. And yet, standing there under those burning stage lights, microphone in hand, something inside me whispered run. I ignored it. I should have listened. because just as I hit the high note of my encore, the arena shook. For a split second, I thought it was just the bass, just the power of the music shaking the walls. But then the screens above the stage flashed white. The audience gasped. A ripple of screams tore through the crowd. And when I turned toward the glass-paneled side of the building, I saw it. A fireball in the sky. My plane. My private fucking jet. It had exploded midair. My heart stopped. My stomach turned to ice. I barely made it backstage before Tony grabbed me. One of DeLuca's muscle-bound enforcers. A man whose name made grown men swallow their words. His grip was iron around my arm, his breath hot against my ear. "Boss says you ain't going nowhere, Vera," he whispered, voice slick with menace. And that's when I knew. This wasn't just a message. This was a sentence. I belonged to DeLuca. Or I didn't belong anywhere at all. Chapter 2. Blood on the Dance Floor. Fear is a strange thing. It doesn't hit you all at once. It seeps in slowly, like smoke under a locked door, curling around you before you even realize you're choking. That's how it felt as I stood backstage at Madison Square Garden, Tony's iron grip around my arm, my ears still ringing from the explosion. I wanted to believe it wasn't real. That maybe, just maybe, I was still on stage, lost in the high of performance, and this was all some twisted hallucination brought on by adrenaline and exhaustion. But the terror in the crowd was real. The fireball in the sky. That was real too. And so was Tony. "You hear me, Vera?" His grip tightened, his thick fingers bruising the skin beneath my sequined sleeve. "Boss says you ain't going nowhere." I swallowed the lump of panic in my throat, trying to steady my breath. "Think. Think fast." DeLuca had made his message loud and clear. He wasn't just funding my comeback, he owned me. I was a pawn in his empire, a dancing, singing, glittering drug mule, and the moment I tried to cut my strings, he yanked me right back. He'd blown up my goddamn plane mid-concert, and now his enforcer was here, ready to drag me off stage like a bad act that had gone on too long. I forced a smile, every muscle in my body screaming at me to keep my cool. "Tony, baby, let's not be hasty," I purred, keeping my voice steady despite the fear gnawing at my gut. "I just gave the best performance of my life. Let me at least change out of this dress before we go running off to see the boss, huh?" Tony smirked, his thick lips pulling into something halfway between amusement and suspicion. "2 minutes, doll. And if you even think about running, I'll break both your knees before you hit the door." I didn't doubt him. I nodded, flashing my best Vera Blue smile. The same one that used to make men throw their wallets and wedding rings at my feet. He let go of my arm, and I turned on my heel, walking toward my dressing room with all the confidence I could fake. But the second I was out of his sight, I didn't go to the dressing room. I went for the emergency exit, and ran for my fucking life. The backstage corridors were a maze, narrow hallways lined with equipment cases and staff members too wrapped up in the chaos of the explosion to pay me any mind. My heels clattered against the floor as I sprinted past a bewildered stagehand, nearly knocking over a catering table in my rush to escape. Behind me, I could hear Tony's footsteps, heavy and angry. "Vera!" His voice was a snarl, his patience wearing thin. "You better not be running, doll." I didn't answer. I just ran faster. I shoved through a side door, bursting out into the alley behind the venue, the crisp New York air slapping me in the face. The streetlights flickered against the damp pavement, reflecting the glow of the burning wreckage in the sky. The moment my feet hit the asphalt, I kicked off my heels. They were custom Louboutins, probably worth more than my dignity at this point. But I didn't give a damn. Barefoot, I ran faster, my breath coming in sharp gasps as I darted into the chaos of the city. DeLuca's men were everywhere. Black cars with tinted windows lined the street, their engines idling like predators waiting for their prey to make the wrong move. A block away, a man in a suit was talking into a radio, his gaze scanning the fleeing concertgoers. Looking for me. I needed somewhere to hide. And I needed to disappear fast. Then I saw it. A cab. Empty. I bolted toward it, wrenching open the back door, and practically throwing myself inside. "Drive," I gasped. "Just fucking drive." The driver, a wiry old man with tired eyes, glanced at me through the rearview mirror, taking in my sequin dress, my wild eyes, the panic practically dripping off me. "Where to, lady?" "Anywhere but here." "Brooklyn," I blurted, my mind racing. "Downtown. Just go." He shrugged, put the car in gear, and pulled away from the curb just as Tony came barreling out of the alley behind me, gun in hand. I ducked low in the seat, my heart hammering against my ribs. I had made it. For now. I spent the next 48 hours in hiding. A rundown motel in Brooklyn, the kind that smelled like piss and regret, was my sanctuary. I paid in cash, kept the blinds shut, and barely moved except to shower and eat cheap takeout. My mind ran in circles, replaying everything over and over again. The explosion. Tony's grip on my arm. The look in DeLuca's eyes the last time I saw him. Like a cat watching a mouse too stupid to realize it was already dead. He wasn't just sending me a message. He was hunting me. And if I wanted to survive, I had to disappear. Completely. Vera Blue had to die. So, I did the one thing I swore I'd never do. I killed her myself. The transformation wasn't glamorous. There was no Hollywood makeover, no dramatic reveal. Just a pair of kitchen scissors hacking away at my signature platinum curls, turning them into a jagged, uneven black bob, thanks to a box of cheap hair dye. My sequin dresses were replaced with jeans and oversized hoodies. My manicured nails were stripped bare, my signature perfume scrubbed away until I didn't even smell like me anymore. I was no longer Vera Blue. I was just Veronica St. James, a washed-up singer with no future and too many enemies. And I had one lifeline left. I picked up the burner phone I'd bought from a bodega and dialed the only number I still had memorized. The line rang once. Twice. Then a familiar, hesitant voice. Hello. I swallowed hard. Manny. Silence. Then. Jesus Christ. Vera. Hearing his voice almost broke me. Manny Santiago. My pianist. My best friend. The only man who had ever seen me as more than just a voice and a body draped in sequins. He was also the only person in this world who might still give a damn whether I lived or died. Manny, I need help, I whispered. I fucked up bad and I don't know what to do. A beat of silence. Then his voice, tight with worry. Where are you? I opened my mouth to answer and felt the cold press of a gun against my ribs. Chapter 3. Dead Girls Don't Sing. The cold kiss of metal against my ribs sent an electric bolt of terror through my spine. My breath caught in my throat, and for a moment, the world around me blurred into silence. Just me, the gun, and the ghost of every bad decision I'd ever made whispering, "This is how it ends, Vera. This is how the curtain falls." A voice, low and slick like oil, hummed against my ear. "Hang up the phone, doll." I knew that voice. "Tony." My heart slammed against my ribcage as I forced my breathing to stay steady. Panic was the enemy. Fear made people stupid, and I couldn't afford to be stupid right now. Slowly, I lowered the burner phone from my ear, my fingers trembling. Manny's voice was still coming through, distant and desperate. "Vera? Vera, are you there? What's going on?" Tony's fingers curled around my wrist, squeezing just hard enough to warn, not break. "Not yet. Tell your little boyfriend you'll call him later," he murmured. I swallowed hard, forcing my voice into something resembling calm. "Manny, I gotta go. I'll call you later." "Vera, wait." Tony plucked the phone from my hand and snapped it in half like a twig. "Oops," he said, smirking. "Guess you won't." A deep, nauseating fear slithered up my spine. I had been so close to reaching safety, so close to someone who still cared. But Tony had found me first. And I knew what that meant. I wasn't walking away from this. He marched me out of the motel, his grip firm but not bruising. Not yet. The Brooklyn night was thick with heat and the scent of garbage, the hum of the city alive even at this hour. A black sedan was parked at the curb, its windows too dark to see inside, but I already knew who was waiting for me. Lorenzo DeLuca. Tony yanked open the door and shoved me inside. My heart jackhammered against my ribs as I hit the leather seat, and there, sitting across from me like the fucking king of the underworld, was DeLuca himself. He looked bored. Not angry. Not pleased. Just bored, like dragging me out of hiding was nothing more than another minor inconvenience in his night. "You know, Vera," he mused, swirling the dark amber liquid in his glass, "I really thought you were smarter than this." I didn't answer. My throat was tight, and my fingers curled into fists against my thighs to stop from shaking. His eyes, dark, shark-like, landed on mine. Cold amusement. Calculated danger. "You had the whole world handed back to you," he said, his voice smooth practiced. "I gave you everything. Your name back, your career, your audience. And this." He gestured vaguely to my cheap hoodie, my ruined hair. "This is what you chose instead." I forced myself to meet his gaze. "I chose to live." A beat of silence. Then he laughed. A slow, mocking chuckle that made my skin crawl. "You think you're living, sweetheart?" He leaned forward, elbows on his knees, gaze locking me in place. "You were dead the second you signed that contract." My stomach twisted, but I kept my face blank. "Show no fear. Show no weakness. You're wasting your time, I said, my voice sharper now. You can threaten me, you can play your little mob boss games, but I'm done, DeLuca. You can't own me. His smile faded. Can I? I barely had a second to register the movement before his hand lashed out. Hard slap across my face. The crack of impact rang in my skull, my head snapping to the side. Pain bloomed across my cheek, white hot, and I bit down hard on my lip to keep from making a sound. Tony chuckled from the front seat. Damn, boss. You didn't even mess up her pretty little nose. DeLuca ignored him, leaning in close, his whiskey-soaked breath hot against my skin. You made me look like a fucking fool, Vera, he murmured, his voice all silk and venom. Running like some scared little girl, making me send my boys out to clean up your mess. That's not how this works. I forced myself to glare at him through the sting. Then kill me. A smirk. Slow. Amused. Nah. He sat back, sipping his drink like we were just old friends having a chat. Not yet. That was worse. Because DeLuca didn't believe in mercy. If he wasn't killing me now, it meant he had something worse planned. I wasn't just going to die. I was going to pay first. The next thing I knew, I was being dragged into an abandoned warehouse on the outskirts of the city. The kind of place where screams went unheard, where the blood on the floor told 100 stories, none with happy endings. Tony shoved me into a metal chair, tying my wrists behind my back with thick zip ties. The plastic cut into my skin, biting deep, and I forced myself to keep my breathing steady. DeLuca sat across from me, stretching his arms like he had all the time in the world. You know, he mused, there's an art to making people regret their choices. I stayed silent. He reached into his jacket, pulled out a small silver vial, and placed it on the table between us. It looked familiar. Too familiar. I felt my stomach drop. Cocaine. Remember this, baby? DeLuca tapped the vial with his finger. Your first love. The thing that made you a star, and the thing that made you nothing. My mouth went dry. You know what's funny? His smirk was slow, knowing. I was gonna let you be a star again. Let you sing, let you have your little tour. Let you feel the love, the high. But now? He'd sked, shaking his head. Now I think I'd rather see you crawl. He unscrewed the vial. Poured the fine white powder onto the table in neat little lines. You're gonna snort every last one of these, Vera, he said, leaning back. And if you don't, a flick of his wrist, and suddenly Tony's gun was pressed against my temple. The room spun. My heart slammed against my ribs. No. No, no, no. I had clawed my way out of this addiction. Out of the hell it had drowned me in. And now he was trying to shove me back under. Do it, DeLuca murmured, eyes dark and waiting. Or I let Tony paint the walls with your brains. I stared at the cocaine. At my past. At my death. Then slowly, I turned my gaze back to DeLuca. And I spat in his face. His eyes flashed. Tony cocked the gun. Boom. The shot wasn't aimed at me. It was aimed at Tony. His body jerked, blood splattering the floor, and I barely had time to process before the warehouse erupted into chaos. Because standing in the doorway, shotgun in hand, eyes blazing with fury, was Manny. Chapter 4, A Song for the Dead. The moment the shotgun blast ripped through the air, everything changed. Tony didn't even get the chance to react. One second he was holding a gun to my head. The next he was slumping sideways, blood painting the concrete like a grotesque abstract. His gun slipped from his fingers, clattering against the cold floor, and the look in his eyes, shock, confusion, the slow realization that he was already dead, froze him in place before his body collapsed. I should have screamed. Should have panicked. But all I felt was relief. The tension snapped like a broken string, the silence after the gunshot even louder than the blast itself. And then DeLuca stood up. His face was blank, controlled, but his eyes burned. Not with fear. Not with surprise. With something much worse. Amusement. Well, well, he murmured, brushing blood spatter off his crisp white suit like he had just stepped in something mildly inconvenient. Manny Santiago. My Manny, the only real friend I had left in this whole goddamn world, stood in the doorway, shotgun still raised, hands steady. His chest rose and fell in deep, controlled breaths, but his eyes, Jesus, his eyes, they were locked on DeLuca like a lion watching its prey. You all right, Vera? His voice was tight, clipped, but there was an edge of softness underneath. I exhaled shakily. I am now. DeLuca chuckled. Chuckled. You got some balls, kid. He adjusted the cuffs of his suit, as if Manny hadn't just blown his best enforcer's head off in front of him. You really think you can walk in here and play hero? Manny didn't flinch. I don't play, motherfucker. And then he pulled the trigger again. The warehouse exploded into chaos. The second blast tore through the air, narrowly missing DeLuca, splintering the wooden crate behind him. He moved fast, too fast, diving behind an overturned table before the next shot could connect. Manny took one step toward me, shotgun still aimed, but before he could reach me, two more of DeLuca's men came barreling in from the side, guns drawn. "Down!" Manny shouted, and I dropped low, flattening myself against the chair as bullets sprayed across the room, sparks flying as they ricocheted off metal beams and broken glass. Manny fired back, his aim sharp, precise, one man down, then the other. But DeLuca was already moving, slipping through the chaos like a goddamn phantom, his rage palpable even from across the room. I had to move. Now! My wrists were still bound behind my back, but Tony's dead body was slumped against my chair, his gun just inches from my feet. If I could just reach it. Manny blasted another round, sending DeLuca ducking for cover again, buying me the moment I needed. I kicked the gun closer, twisted my body, and, fuck, the zip ties cut into my skin as I stretched, strained, reached. Got it. The cold metal pressed into my palm, my fingers wrapping around the grip, just as DeLuca's voice slashed through the air. You think this changes anything, Vera? I twisted my body, spinning just in time to see him rise from cover, gun in hand, fury burning in his gaze. I didn't hesitate. I pulled the trigger. The gun kicked hard, but my shot went wide, slamming into the crates behind him. DeLuca snarled, raising his own gun, and for a split second, I thought, this is it, this is where I die. Then Manny fired first. The impact sent DeLuca staggering back, the bullet tearing through his shoulder. He crashed against the crates behind him, knocking bottles and debris to the floor, but he wasn't dead. Not yet. Blood poured down his arm, staining his expensive suit, but he still grinned, still laughed, his teeth red with it. You dumb bitch, he wheezed, coughing through the pain. You think you can kill me? You think you can just fucking walk away? My breath heaved, my wrists raw from the zip ties, my pulse a goddamn war drum in my ears. And then, DeLuca's phone rang. Everything froze. The sound of it cut through the tension like a knife. Manny and I exchanged a quick look as DeLuca, still grinning like the devil himself, reached into his pocket and answered. Yeah, he rasped, eyes locked on me. It's done. Get the plane ready. My stomach dropped. The plane. I didn't know what scared me more, that he was still trying to leave after all this, or that he still thought he could win. Manny's voice was low, dark. Who the fuck are you calling? DeLuca's grin widened, his fingers smeared red as he gripped his bleeding shoulder. You really think I came here alone? And that's when the warehouse doors blew open. Three black SUVs screeched to a stop just outside. More of DeLuca's men. More guns. We were outnumbered. Way outnumbered. Manny pulled me up, eyes flicking between the exits. No way out. Not unless we wanted to go out in a goddamn body bag. DeLuca smirked, watching the realization sink in. You fucked up, Vera, he murmured. You should have just kept your mouth shut. Kept your pretty little ass on stage where I put you. Now, you're nothing but a liability. His men raised their weapons. And Manny did something crazy. He grabbed me by the waist and fucking ran. Boom. The first shot barely missed us. The second sent glass shattering as we barreled through a side door, sprinting into the alley. Bullets followed. We ducked low, cutting between dumpsters, my lungs burning, my body screaming for me to stop, but we couldn't stop. We ran. Through the alley. Into the street. Dodging cars, slipping into the shadows, running for our fucking lives. By the time we made it to a safe house, a shitty apartment owned by one of Manny's old jazz buddies, I was shaking. Manny locked the door, bolted the windows. His hands were still steady. His breath still even. But when he turned to me, his eyes told a different story. You all right? He asked. I let out a breathless, shaking laugh. Manny, I don't even know what the fuck all right means anymore. He sighed, rubbing his face. We're not safe yet. I nodded, still trying to catch my breath. Then what do we do? He exhaled. Slow. Heavy. And when he finally looked at me, I saw it. The answer was already in his eyes. We kill DeLuca. Chapter 5, The Final Encore. There comes a moment in life when you realize there's no turning back. No rewrites, no second chances, just one final act, and the only way it ends is with blood on the floor. That moment had arrived. Manny and I weren't running anymore. We weren't hiding. This wasn't about escaping. This was about finishing it. DeLuca had to die. We spent the next 3 days preparing. The safe house, a tiny shitty apartment above a rundown jazz club, became our war room. The walls were thin, the air stale with cigarette smoke, and the fridge held nothing but cheap beer and a carton of eggs that expired a month ago. but it was safe. And it gave us time. Time to watch. Time to plan. DeLuca wasn't hiding. That wasn't his style. He was still out there, moving his product, running his empire, acting like he hadn't just tried to put me 6 feet under. Like I was nothing more than a loose end he'd deal with when it was convenient. He thought he had already won. And that was his first mistake. Vera, you sure about this? Manny's voice was low, steady. He sat across from me at the tiny kitchen table, a cigarette burning between his fingers, the glow of the city flickering through the blinds. He looked tired. We both did. I exhaled, staring at the gun resting between us. A sleek black Glock. Not my first, wouldn't be my last. I've never been more sure of anything in my life, I murmured. Manny studied me for a long moment, then nodded. He trusted me. Even now, after everything. That was his first mistake. Because I wasn't telling him everything. The plan was simple. We knew where DeLuca would be. He was holding a private event, a high rollers party at a club downtown, one of those exclusive, members-only places where the rich and powerful rubbed elbows with the criminals who kept their pockets full. A den of sin, where champagne flowed like water and drugs lined the bathroom counters like party favors. He would be there. And so would we. Manny thought we were going in together. Thought we were walking in side by side, guns loaded, ready to put DeLuca in the ground before he even knew what hit him. But he didn't know what I had planned. He didn't know I wasn't walking out of this either. The night of the party, I got dressed like it was the last time I'd ever be on stage. A black dress, sleek and dangerous. My hair pulled back, makeup flawless, red lips painted like a bloody promise. Manny looked at me, brow furrowed. You don't have to do this. I smiled. Yes, I do. And I meant it. We walked into the club separately. Manny took the back entrance, moving through the staff corridors, gun tucked against his ribs. I took the front, flashing a fake smile at the bouncer, who barely gave me a second glance. The place was packed, neon lights casting everything in a haze of red and gold, music pulsing like a heartbeat, bodies moving in a slow, intoxicating rhythm. And at the center of it all, Lorenzo DeLuca. He was seated in a VIP booth, surrounded by his men, his women, his money. A king on his throne. A man who thought he was untouchable. I moved toward him, slow and deliberate, every step bringing me closer to the end. He saw me before I reached him. And he smiled. Like I was an old friend. Like I hadn't spent the last week trying to escape his grasp. He leaned back, swirling a glass of bourbon, his eyes flicking over me like he had already won. Vera, he drawled. I was wondering when you'd come to your senses. I slid into the booth across from him, ignoring the two men flanking him, guns undoubtedly strapped to their waists. I came to say goodbye, I said smoothly. He smirked. You really think you're leaving? I met his gaze. I know I am. His smirk faltered. Because that's when he noticed it. The detonator in my hand. I could see the exact second realization dawned in his eyes. You crazy fucking bitch, he hissed. I smiled. Behind me, the doors burst open. Manny, gun drawn, ready to take the shot. DeLuca moved first. He grabbed my wrist, twisting hard, but I didn't fight. I just laughed. You don't win, DeLuca, I whispered. Not this time. Then I pressed the button. Boom. The explosion ripped through the club, fire erupting from the back rooms where I had planted the charges earlier. Screams filled the air. The world shook and suddenly there was no music, no glamour, no disco lights, only chaos. I was yanked backward, tackled to the ground just as bullets started flying. Manny's voice loud urgent. Vera? Move. But I didn't. Because DeLuca was still alive. Coughing bloodied but alive. And crawling toward a gun. I didn't think. I didn't hesitate. I grabbed the shattered glass bottle near my hand and drove it into his throat. His eyes went wide. His mouth opened, tried to speak, but all that came out was blood. And then he was gone. The fire spread fast. Manny was pulling me up, dragging me toward the exit, the heat pressing against our backs like the devil himself. We made it out just before the roof caved in, the club collapsing into an inferno of smoke and embers. We stood there, watching it burn, the scent of gasoline and death thick in the air. Manny turned to me, breathing hard. You were gonna die in there. His voice was rough, shaking with something between rage and grief. I didn't answer. Because he was right. I had planned to die with DeLuca. But Manny? He wasn't ready to let me go. And somehow against all odds. I survived. We disappeared after that. No headlines. No police investigations. Just ghosts slipping through the cracks, vanishing into the night. Vera Blue? She was gone. But Veronica St. James lived. And this time, She wasn't coming back.